out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 27th of May 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, today is another bank holiday and it's also the results of the EU elections. Now, we've been predicting for quite some time that there was going to be a huge populist wave all the way across Europe, and there has been. It's been slightly less than it could have been, but only very, very slightly. It does appear that the Eurosceptics populists now have the second largest grouping in the EU, which is very good. But particularly in Britain, in particular, we did have some disappointment. Tommy Robinson didn't get his seat, which really, really did disappoint me. And I'm going to go into all of the wins and the losses right the way across the EU. And we'll start with just discussing Tommy Robinson a bit, I think. Now, I was watching Rabbi Media last night. They had a live show to concentrate on how Tommy Robinson did. And I was really struck by the fact that Israel Avant, he's really not that good a presenter. I mean, he's not a patch on Henrik and Lana. And I do have my criticisms of Henrik and Lana, which I'm not going to go into here. But they are so much better than Israel Avant. I don't understand why he is so popular, to be honest. I mean, really, I think he sort of travels on the coattails of Tommy Robinson's popularity. And I was really surprised to see that Tommy only got 39,000 votes in the northwest of Britain. It was only 2.2%. There's a couple of things that this could tell us, because also UKIP failed to actually win any seats. Carl Benjamin and Mark Meacham, they didn't make the grade either. And this is despite having up to a million subscribers on their YouTube channel. So what this shows us is that success on the internet doesn't necessarily correlate with success at the polls. You might have a lot of people that are subscribing to your YouTube channel, but that doesn't mean that they're going to go out and vote for you, because it may be that those people aren't actually even in your country or even in your area, because you can only vote for Tommy Robinson if you're actually in the northwest of England. And I dare say a lot of the people that support him come from America, come from Australia. They're not even in Europe. But I did think he would have done better than he actually did. And I think he has a good case to go to the courts about election interference, to be honest. He should go to the elections watchdog. I mean, it may be that there was some dodgy dealings actually went on with the counting. 39,000 votes is very low. I think UKIP, they came just above Tommy Robinson. And I think they had 3% of the vote. And around about 150,000 votes, something like that. Now, perhaps if Tommy Robinson had been with UKIP rather than an independent, maybe he would have had a lot more. Maybe there would have been 6%. For him, if they had combined forces. It was a great shame that Gerard Batten didn't get on the ball and ask for a vote from the UKIP members whether they would change the constitution to allow Tommy to join, because it was a great shame that the vote was split in such a way between UKIP and himself. And there could have been dodgy things going on with the election boxes. I mean, we've heard Max Musson before who's been involved in the electoral process about all the chances that there are to get rid of the ballot boxes and get rid of the votes in there and change them. It's a very simple thing to do. There are lots of holes in the system where that can go on. I forget which speech it was he gave, but he gave a very long speech all about the ways that electoral fraud could take place a couple of years back. So maybe if people are interested in that, they should check that out, because that may have gone on. But besides that, even if it was all fairly counted and none of the votes actually disappeared, there was so much interference that actually went on with Tommy's campaigning that he should be able to do. I'm sure he should be able to do something about that with the elections watchdog. I mean, I've made a short list of some of the interference that went on. And he had his Facebook taken down at the insistence of the British government, even though he had actually broken no laws, and he was standing in an election, and yet they took down his Facebook. They took down his Twitter. His Twitter had been taken down before, his personal Twitter, but then there was a new Twitter that was set up specifically for the campaign. It wasn't a personal Twitter of his. That was removed. Instagram, they removed his ability to talk to the public, and YouTube put all his videos in a limited state. So it meant that he had no means of actually communicating with the public. People that aren't really into using the internet, they may not have even known that he was campaigning. And in the world that we live in, so much of our lives is done on the internet. They're even talking about making it a human right to have the internet, because you need to remain connected to people. And yet these huge, great conglomerate internet companies can just wipe somebody out in an instant, wipe out millions of followers, wipe out that connection to millions of people, and then you've got no ability of actually talking to them. So, I mean, credit to Tommy. He went out and did the traditional form of campaigning. He went out and he did all his rallies, and he did lots of meet and greets, and went to all these towns in the Northwest speaking to people. But that he can only have spoken to a few thousand people by doing that. That's all he could have reached. When he had his YouTube channel, I think he had a million subscribers on there. I know he had a million followers on Facebook that was taken away from him. So he was prevented from communicating with people on the internet. And then I believe he shelled out a lot of money on leaflets. It may have even been £30,000 to get Royal Mail to deliver these leaflets. And apparently they weren't delivered. Apparently they were dumped, and there were postmen that were refusing to deliver them. Again, this is serious election interference to prevent a candidate's manifesto being delivered to people's houses. Then he had his PayPal shut down, so he couldn't receive any contributions. Then he had his Stripe account shut down, and then he was able to get his Stripe account reinstated. So he was unable to actually receive any contributions. And the really sad thing about this is that he's not going to get back his deposit on this. I mean, he spent a lot of money on this campaigning, which we should all be very grateful for him for doing that. I mean, that's a good cause for him to put his contributions to, I think, is going out and campaigning like this. I mean, there's been accusations of, oh, well, he gets all this money donated to him, and, you know, he lives the high life or whatever. But, you know, he's put a lot of money into this campaign. And basically, I mean, he's got it all recorded, all the interference in democracy and all the interference and the election meddling. He's got it all recorded. And I guess he wouldn't have had that if he hadn't done this campaign. And so many of the public wouldn't have realized the lies that were being told about him. I mean, that newspaper report that was trying to blame the Tommy Robinson supporters for the Muslim gang that were throwing bricks and rocks and scissors and smashing windows. I mean, it's quite obvious, even though the newspapers were saying that this was carried out by his supporters, all the people in the pictures were brown. So, I mean, that would have woken a lot of people up to the lies that the press have been telling us. We also had council interference. The council in Scotland, they got the police to block off all the roads so that he couldn't bring his bus into town. And there were stalls in that town from the Labour Party and various others, and they were allowed to set up on the single yellow lines, which is a council responsibility, not a police responsibility. And yet the police were there preventing him from parking his bus there so that he could campaign. Of course, you're not supposed to park on a single yellow line, but if you do, it's just a simple matter of a parking ticket. It's not a legal matter that the police should be involved in. So there was council interference there. There was police interference when they escorted an armed and masked Muslim street gang to his rally point to hurl missiles at him. And of course, this is all the while in the Houses of Parliament, they are complaining about the intimidation of political candidates on Twitter. I mean, that's got nothing to the physical violent intimidation that went on to Tommy Robinson and his supporters. You got all the false reporting in the press. I think he stands a really good chance of going to the elections watchdog and saying, look, I've got all this documentary evidence of interference in this election. Maybe he will be able to get some form of financial compensation, which would be a good idea. And also, it would have to be reported on in the press that he was saying that there had been intimidation and election interference. So it's a great shame that he didn't actually get in there, because it would have been wonderful to see him there. I've been thinking, you know, what would have been best? We've got the Brexit Party that have actually won. They've won outright. But would it have been better to not have the Brexit Party win outright and just have that one man, Tommy Robinson, in the EU? You know, and I think maybe we would have been better just to have had that one Tommy Robinson in there, because at least he would be bringing up the issues that need talking about, the Muslim grooming gangs. And when you think about National Socialism, it's not about a committee deciding things. It's about these individuals that we have within our race that show that spark and that genius. They're the ones that get things done, not the committees, not the parties. That's why National Socialism succeeded, is because they had Adolf Hitler. It was that one man that was the driving force. So maybe we would have been better to have just that one Tommy Robinson in the EU rather than the massive, massive win that the Brexit Party have had, which I'll get into now. The Brexit Party has won 9 of the 11 regions in Britain to declare their results in the European elections, claiming 29 of 70 seats in the European Parliament with 32% of the vote. Massive 32% of the vote. I think that the closest to come to them were the Liberal Democrats with 20%. So the Liberal Democrats, you know, they got just over half the amount of the vote that Nigel Farage's party got. Farage's party came top in the North East, the North West, the East of England, Wales, West Midlands, East Midlands, Yorkshire and Humber, the South West and the South East. And the only place that that he didn't actually win, of course, was London, which is 60% non-white, and Scotland, which is 60% communist, I guess you could say, because they support the Scottish Internationalist Party up there. And what Nigel Farage has said is what this win means, this massive landslide win for the Brexit Party, it means that they are going to demand a role in the negotiation process with the European Union. And if they don't get it, they've said that they're going to win in the general election, and they may well do that. I mean, if you look at the people that they've got standing in the Brexit Party, they've got people like Anne Widdecombe, Dr. David Bull, lots of famous people that are well liked by the general public, a lot of whom have previous political experience. Most of them are Tories. And I could very well see that the supporters of the Tory party defecting to the Brexit party in a general election. They've had polls. They have polled people about what their voting choices would be in a general election. And 35% of people say they would vote for the Brexit party. So they have got considerable leverage, I think, over the Conservatives to say that they need to be taking part in the EU negotiations, because we are supposed to be leaving the European Union on October the 29th now. We need a new leader for the Conservative Party. And the results of this, this huge win for Brexit, the Brexit Party, means that whoever is going to be leading the Conservative Party now is going to have to be a hard Brexiteer. And that means that if the European Union won't do what we want them to do, then we need to be leaving with a clean break on World Trade Organization terms, which is what the Brexit Party campaigned on, leaving with a clean break, leaving on World Trade Organization terms, which is what Brexit actually is. This nonsense about a hard Brexit or a no-deal Brexit, I mean, that's what Brexit is. It means leaving the customs union. It means leaving the laws. It means leaving this Schengen zone and control of our borders. And that's what Brexit is. I'm sick to death of Remainers talking about Theresa May's red lines as if she just made those red lines up. I mean, that's basically the definition of Brexit, was her red lines. And then she broke them all with her backdoor treaty that she did, which is what eventually pulled her down. And we'll be talking about that in Aryan Britannia later on today. So the Brexit Party had a huge win. And according to early projections, this huge populist wave in Europe means that the Eurosceptics will be second. In first place in the European Parliament will be the EPP, which will be the largest party with 178 MEPs, which I think is centre-right. And then there will be at least 169 Eurosceptics in second place, laying siege to Brussels. And in third place will be the S&D with 147. And of course, up until now, it's always been the EPP and the S&D. And the EPP has always had an outright majority, and they don't have an outright majority anymore. They've only got 9 more MEPs than the Eurosceptics have. So that's good news at the EU level. France, we've had some very good news in France. Marine Le Pen has beaten Macron. She got 24% with her national rally. Macron got 22%. And she has said what this means is that Macron must now dissolve the National Assembly and must call a general election, because he has lost his mandate to rule. He's got riots going on there. I mean, all this is being covered up from us. We're not being told about the yellow jackets that are still setting fire to things over there. France is still in flames. And until Macron goes, that is going to continue. They need to have a general election. Marine Le Pen needs to take over. She needs to be the president of France. And then we might get some changes there. Don't forget, she did win in the first round of the presidential elections. And then what they did, they had an unholy alliance of all the parties together that claimed to be opposed to one another in order to prevent her getting into the second round of presidential elections. But if Macron goes now, she does stand a good chance of winning the general election. And this definitely gives her moral authority, since she has the majority in the EU elections. Italy, very good news in Italy, as we forecast. Salvini has got 35% of the vote. I mean, these are phenomenal percentages of the votes in Europe, where you have so many different parties and you have so many governments that are made up of coalitions. 35% is a huge share of the vote. The Five Star Movement, which are the other half of the ruling coalition, they took just 17% of the vote. So under half of what Salvini got. And don't forget, when this coalition was elected into power, it was the Five Star Movement that actually had the majority. And it was Salvini's League that only had about 17% of the vote. But because of the great success of Salvini's nationalist policies, the public have loved it so much, he's just shot up in the polls. I mean, he is the Italian superhero Salvini. 35%. The actual other half of the ruling coalition, the Five Star Movement, they actually came in as only the third biggest party. And they were beaten to second place by the Democratic Party, Italy's centre-left force, which won 22%. Yeah, and you can compare Salvini's win there, 35%, to last time, where he got 17.4% in the general election and only 6% at the last European ballot in 2014. So he's gone from 6% to 35%. Mr. Salvini has transformed the League from a weak marginal party that once campaigned for secession for northern Italy from the rest of the country into a formidable nationalist force leading Europe's Reconquista. And Salvini is going to be the face of the new Europe. Macron is gone. Merkel is gone. Salvini is the face of the new Europe. And between him and Orban, they've shown that it can be done. It can be done. Orban managed to prevent any refugees coming into Hungary to make their way into northern Europe. And he didn't have to do that because those refugees weren't staying in Hungary. They were just passing through. So Orban has done that out of loyalty to all the other European nations. That's why he did that. And Salvini has done the same with the boats, with the invasion by sea. He's managed to cut back 90% of the invasion force by sea. And that's also cut back on all the deaths as well. There are far less deaths at sea now, which, of course, is what we were told why we needed to have these taxis going to pick them up, because there were too many deaths happening. The way to stop these Negroes drowning at sea is to prevent their boats from coming in the first place by telling them that they're not going to get in. They're not going to be able to dock. And Salvini has shown that that can be done, even while you're a part of the EU. Orban has shown that that can be done, even while you are a part of the EU. So that is an example that the rest of Europe can now follow. And it's a successful example. I mean, Orban's Fidesz party, they got 52% of the vote. 52%. I mean, these guys aren't called populists for nothing. They are very popular with the people that are voting them in. Moving back to Britain here, we'll have a look at these other parties that we've got in Britain. We've got the Lib Dems. They've got 15 seats and they got 20% of the vote. And the Liberal Democrats, they are the Remain party. They campaigned on having a second referendum and doing their best to keep us within the European Union. So the fact that the Brexit party got 32% and the Remain party only got 20% shows the strength of feeling that there is in Britain about Brexit. Labour only got 10 seats. They only got 14% of the vote. I think they lost 10% of the vote on last time. So the actual official opposition in government at the moment, they only got 14% of the vote. The Conservatives, this was the biggest loss. They lost 15 seats and they now only have 4 seats in the EU. They dropped by 9% down to 15%. Or no, sorry. They dropped 15% and they're now down to only 9%. And they're in fifth place. And this is unheard of for a ruling government to have lost so much of the support from the country. And then, as I said, so sad, UKIP lost 24 seats and they now only have 3%. Theresa May's party have lost such a huge share of the vote across all regions, so far losing 15 MEP seats to leave a total of just 4 seats. The party is now in fifth place with its lowest vote share in a national election since the formation of the party in 1834. So this is the lowest result the Conservative Party have ever had in the entire history of the Conservative Party. And the reason for that is because they have been led by this progressive, liberal, feminist, Theresa May. And that's what her legacy is. That's what she's going to go down in history as doing, is destroying the Conservative Party. Well, moving on again into the rest of Europe, We've got the alternative for Deutschland in Germany. Apparently they came fourth. I think they got about 10% of the vote. That's pretty good going. It's neither better nor less, I don't think, than last time. Austria. Now, we were worried about Austria because of this scandal that happened with the Freedom Party that Carolin Jaeger did a very good job of explaining last Thursday. And we were worried that this might have harmed Sebastian Kurz. Now, Sebastian Kurz is the centre-right politician that leads Austria, and he was leading in coalition with the Freedom Party until this scandal. And he's had a lot of stick for forming a coalition with the Freedom Party, but as he said, he was unable to form a coalition with the Communist Social Democrats for obvious reasons. So he formed this coalition with the Freedom Party. And they've had to dissolve the government, call a snap election, and there's also been a vote of no confidence in Sebastian Kurz's leadership has been called. So we were concerned about him. But he's won 34.9% of the vote in Austria, which is great news. So the Austrian people have seen that this was just something unfortunate that happened. And they don't want the Social Democrats back in. They want Sebastian Kurz there. So that's great. He got 34.9% of the vote. The Social Democrats, the Communists, they got 23%. And the Freedom Party, they got 17%. So it's really not too bad for the Freedom Party. They are going to be able to recover from this, I think. Moving over to Estonia, we have the Conservative People's Party. That's the Nationalist Party over there in Estonia. They tripled their score to come in fourth with 12.7%, and they will be represented in the European Parliament by one MEP. And that MEP will be Ruben Kalep, who has spoken at the American Renaissance Conference. He's been on a few Countercurrents podcasts, and I've met him a couple of times, and he's spoken at the Awakening Conference. He is a white nationalist, and he is going to be the MEP for Estonia, so that's great news. In Hungary, the National Election Office has announced that the ruling right-wing Fidesz Party has won with 52.14% of the vote. How can anyone say that that man is a dictator? How can anyone say that Orbán is a dictator when he has 52% of the country love him and vote for him? I mean, he's doing great things for Hungary. Great things for Europe. The Democratic Coalition came in second with 16%. Think about that. A third of what the Fidesz Party, that's their nearest rivals, have only got a third of the amount of the votes that Orbán got. And the Liberal Momentum movement came in third with 9.92%. Poland, the ruling Law and Justice Party, came first with 43.1% of the vote. And again, the Poland Law and Justice Party, they get accused of all these terrible things, and yet they're so popular with the people. 43% of the vote they got. Spain, the Vox Party, which is only contending its second EU election, they finished fifth with 6.8% of the vote, which is a bit lower than what was hoped that they were going to get. And in the last month's general election, they actually got 10.3%. So that's a bit of a surprise that they didn't do a lot better. Sweden, and this is quite funny. Don't forget that in Sweden, that's the home of Greta Thunberg, the latest child prodigy that is a form of false opposition, basically. She's controlled opposition. She supports the Green Party. And of course, that's why all the British politicians sat down with her. That's why she was at the Economic Forum and everything else. And actually, in Sweden, the Green Party are actually in ruling coalition. So it's hardly an alternative what she is supporting there. But actually, in the homeland of Greta Thunberg in Sweden, preliminary results put the ruling Social Democrats in a lead with 24% of the vote. But their coalition partner, the Green Party, actually looks set to lose some 4 percentage points from 2014 and finish fourth with 11%. So obviously, the Swedes didn't think so much of Greta Thunberg's campaigning as we were told they did. The Sweden Democrats, that's the civic nationalists over there, they nearly doubled their score with a projected 16% compared to 9% in 2014, which means that they will be finishing third, right behind the Conservative Moderate Party. So the Sweden Democrats, they could get some MEPs out of this as well. Finally, we've had a bit of a disappointment with the Netherlands. Geert Wilders and his Freedom Party, which, don't forget, a couple of years back, we were thinking, well, they could actually win the general election. And they were projected to do well in the EU elections. They actually saw their support plummet to just 3.5%. Apparently in 2014, they had 13.2%. So I wonder what's going on there. I wonder if the vote was split with this new Civic Nationalist Party that they have over there that did so well in the recent council elections. So overall, I think the EU elections have been positive. We've seen the populace doing very well. They could have done slightly better. We've had massive wins in Italy, massive wins in France, massive wins in Hungary and Poland. We've had a white nationalist from Estonia that's going to be an MEP. Golden Dawn don't seem to be doing very well. I mean, I haven't actually seen any reports from Greece that have even mentioned Golden Dawn, and they were doing so well a few years back. But what it does mean is that we now have this big nationalist coalition in the European Parliament, which is in second place. And it means in Britain, the Conservatives are very, very worried, and the Labour Party are very, very worried about not keeping their promise to pull us out of the EU. And if that means that the new leader of the Conservative Party is going to have to be right-leaning. So that's positive as well for Britain, even though we didn't get Tommy in. So all in all, very positive. But could have been better, I think. That's my views of the EU elections. And I expect we'll have some more detailed analysis of the Germanic countries from Carolyn Jaeger on Wednesday. So you can look forward to that. Okay, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're tuned in to Radio Arrow.